present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Brecon and Radnorshire Express, read by Charlotte Green.
Wanted, retired sheepdog as a companion to retired sheep farmer. Must be good with sheep.
Thanks to Trevor Lee of Poets for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Phil Jupiters. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jan Ravens. Francis, who made a far-right royal idiot of himself this week?
It was Prince Harry. He went to a fancy dress party. That was rather odd, because in all the reports it said the theme of this party was natives and colonials. But obviously someone had told him it was one of those Sound of Music-themed evenings, and so he was trusted in a nun and a Nazi, and he went as a Nazi. And someone sold the pictures to the Sun. Though it was obviously not thought newsworthy, the person who took the pictures at the party and sold them to the Sun said, Prince William is wearing a very interesting lion costume, and didn't even notice the Nazi thing, because they thought that's par for the course. apparently he's fallen in with a bad lot, it said in the paper today.
The Nazi party.
Is it?
Well, yes, you've either got the rowing club or the rugby sock. I thought I'd join the Nazis. They look like a right laugh. They're great, y'all. They gave me this shirt.
Makes Fergie look very regal, doesn't it, I must say. Because the Queen has been behaving appallingly as well, and she's been shooting her mouth off again, saying that Paris should get the Olympics in 2012.
She meant Berlin.
She doesn't want to. Well, it was
the slip of the tongue.
Prince Harry apologised this week after being photographed wearing a Nazi uniform at a fancy dress party. He issued a written apology through a statement published by the Reich's Ministry of Information.
Wouldn't that be great? Buckingham Palace on the balcony. I am very sorry!
Also this week, a fantasist with a long history of pretending to be a friend of the royal family appeared in court. Jenny Bond asked for 2,000 other events for consideration. Phil, who's coming home after a rum deal in Cuba?
The British guys that were at Guantanamo Bay are finally coming home. And in order to, you know, not throw them in at the deep end straight away, they're taking them down to Torbay in Devon, where they built a lovely camp there for them. So they're still getting the sea air. It's not too much of a wrench in this. Now, the thing is with these guys, Bush got the gig in America, and he was very excited for a good year and a bit. Oh, he was running around taking photos of himself next to the Lincoln portrait. You know, whoa, this is brilliant, I'm president. And but the FBI was sending in these memos saying, there's this Bin Laden fella and we think he might kick off. And they're like, whoa, whoa, look, I've got a stapler with my name on it. And eventually, what happened on 9/11, and he started paying attention. And, you know, he thought, well, what we'll do is we'll get him, we'll get the guy, we'll get Bin Laden. And they couldn't find him. So we'll get his friends, and they couldn't find them. So we'll get people who knew his friends, and they couldn't find them. Well, OK, let's broaden it out a little bit more. Angry people. We'll get angry people with a Quran. Angry people with a Quran. And they just kept broadening it and broadening it until eventually it was just anyone brown with an attitude, wallop, they were in. That's pretty much how the American authorities played it.
2 points. Home Secretary Jack Straw has announced that the four remaining British men held at Guantanamo Bay will be released in the next few weeks. Following their long detention, it's feared the four men will have little idea of what is going on in the outside world or how to relate to ordinary people. They'll be made High Court judges next week. Jan, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you very much.
Why did the fat lady swearing make protesters spring into action?
This will be the decree that did come from some bloke who used to be a builder in Wales, that all kind of meek, mild-mannered BBC executives, what put on Jerry Springer the Opera, should be smote with strongly worded, wrathful emails and sent running from their homes to their friends' weekend cottages in Somerset, possibly. Jerry Springer, the opera, it got all these Christian voice people very hot under the collar. And I'm sort of rather disappointed, really, that all these good Christian folk are not busy with better things to do in the world. I mean, haven't they got whist drives to organise, for goodness sake?
I was very impressed that all these prats turned up outside Broadcasting House and burnt their television licences. I don't know anybody who knows where their television licence is. I mean, they must have them laid out waiting for the day when they can burn them.
One of the fellas has got the direct debit, so he has to come back to Television Centre every month and burn it.
I think the point they were making was that the BBC has a charter to, you know, inform and blah, 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 blah. Really? And they were kind of, yeah, that they were betraying that.
Is that why we're here?
Apparently,
we're improving things? That's
yeah, we're informing news. And entertaining.
Great.
Oh, are we supposed to inform? Right. Mm. Okay, my mum makes lovely pasties.
This is the uproar caused by the BBC's decision to screen Jerry Springer the Opera last weekend, resulting in the evangelical group Christian Voice threatening to sue the BBC for blasphemy. BBC has denied that the racy broadcast was a blatant attempt to boost audience figures by pandering to their baser instincts. So, Francis, could you turn a little bit to your right because our webcam's not picking up your tassel nipples properly?
Pretty rich coming from you, matey.
I've never worn tassel nipples. Tempted, many times.
What is a tassel nipple?
Maybe he meant nipple tassel.
I think he might have. Oh, imagine having to sit there with tassels, putting a nipple on the end of every... It'd be all night.
Alan, listen to this. Of my castle by the One Due Project. Alan, who thinks it's reasonable to defend the status quo?
The status quo of what? This is not the band, this is the country. It's Charles Clark, isn't
it? It's Charles Clark, yes.
Blair, about 2 weeks ago, said he wanted to allow householders to shoot anyone who came within 100 yards of their houses, and this new Home Secretary says that actually there's no need for that because existing law allows that.
So it's Englishman's home is his castle. I was still on tassel. I was still on nipple tassel castle. I was thinking it was something.
It's not anagrams on this show, love.
No, okay. Sorry, I'm a new girl. I don't know these.
The old saying, an Englishman's nipple is his tassel.
Yeah.
So what's it's that? Who are you allowed to beat the crap out of in your own house if they're not supposed to be there?
Exactly.
I just wanted a list with, you know, my brother-in-law on it. That's all. Yeah. We're just waiting for this carte blanche to attack whoever you want. Invite them round, but then hide and turn the lights off. Yeah, come round, the door will be open.
There's a piece in yesterday's Daily Mail, Where Else Would It Be, saying that 78%, I think, of householders keep a weapon under the bed in the event of being burglars.
Yeah, but that's just an excuse when the kids find it. Yeah, it's to defend burglars, love. The vibration scares them off.
2 points to the lot on my right, 1 point to the lot on my left. Home Secretary Charles Clark has announced that despite indications of the contrary, the government won't be changing the law on tackling burglars. At the end of round one, the scores are Alan and Jan have 3, Francis and Phil in the lead with 6. And we start round two with an item from the Skegness Target series about seabird rescuers at the Natureland Seal Sanctuary.
Richard Yedden, the co-proprietor, said, "Our bird expert, George Rutter, has been really busy rehabilitating a variety of seabirds recently, including 2 gannets, several gulls, a razorbill and 8 guillemots. But he hasn't seen a shag for months."
Thanks to Julia Alton of Skegness for that. Francis, which poster boy's got a right pasting this week?
Is it Gordon and Tony?
It is.
The Neighbours from Hell. They've been doing this round-the-clock binge arguing that they're going for. And it does actually occur to me on the way here that this is probably why Blair is so keen to extend the law on the rights of householders to defend themselves violently against anyone who attempts to muscle in on their territory, because then he could shoot Gordon Brown and plead self-defence. But anyway, they've been bickering away. I can't remember what it was. I think Gordon says that Tony promised that he was going to step down last year, and then when the day came, Tony said, "Hey, I had my fingers crossed." No returns, and all that sort of thing. And Gordon went blabbing to a man called Peston, who wrote a book about it. But they were given a rollicking by the Labour Party. The Parliamentary Labour Party told them to shut up and behave themselves. It's amazing, you'd think in a week like this, it'd be hard to imagine anyone who can make Prince Harry look dignified, but they've achieved it.
Are they going to put them in that Neighbours from Hell television programme? So you are going to get a drunk Gordon, you know, rolling around going, it's all me, I could be playing Manchester. Banging on the wall. Let me, it's my turn. I won't let you look in my box.
Gordon Brown is going to be leader. I mean, the line in the Peston book that they haven't mentioned, which upset them all this week, was Brown supposedly saying to Blair, I'll never believe another word you say. Now, this is something that puts him on message with 98% of the electorate.
This week, a meeting of the Parliamentary Labour Party criticised Mr Blair and Mr Brown for allowing their bickering to become public. A new biography of the Chancellor is said to reveal the true extent of the rift between the two men, which began at the famous dinner at Granita when Gordon offered to pick up the bill and then borrowed 50 off Tony to cover it. Phil, why hasn't the sun gone down in South Africa this week?
These bloody kids in and out of court all the time. I blame the parents. Mark Wonderkind Thatcher has got into a spot of bother by the simple charitable act of buying a helicopter. You know what it's like. You're in South Africa, bit of free time on your hands. You think, you know what? I'm going to buy an air ambulance. So he bought a helicopter. $275,000 he spent on it. And it turns out it was a part of the Air Force for a coup attempt to take over Equatorial Guinea. So when buying a helicopter, you must check several things. You must always ask. Right, okay, so it's not a smart car with a Flymo engine on the roof, is it? And then you're not going to use it to invade Equatorial Guinea, are you? So Thatcher, he's plea bargained his way out.
I was at school with him. He was one of the stupidest boys in the Western Hemisphere, and he's now one of the stupidest men in the Southern Hemisphere. But that was so brilliant about this plea bargain, because he was bang to rights. He'd bought the helicopter and they'd hired light aircraft, and teams of mercenaries were arriving as well. A slight clue that it might not be an air ambulance.
He
pleaded ignorance, which is the perfect defence for Mark Thatcher, because of course everyone would believe him. He'd say, I was too stupid. I didn't realise they were going to do this. And that's entirely plausible. If you're at school with him, you would think, this was a man who couldn't tie his own shoes. He had to get his fag to do it for him.
He got what was coming to him, though, because he had to spend the entire Christmas and New Year period with his mother. Just the two of them. South Africa, can you imagine the fun and games? I mean, the songs, the games, where they were on New Year's Eve, you put your arms for mercenaries in, your arms for mercenaries out, in, out, in, out.
Hours of fun with charades. Well, actually, the Telegraph, had a headline.
No, you're right, first time.
The Telegraph had a headline saying, Thatcher escapes jail. I didn't even know she'd been in prison. And for about 1 second, I thought, my God, how wonderful.
Sir Mark Thatcher has pleaded guilty in a South African court to being involved in the failed attempt to stage a coup in Equatorial Guinea. Thatcher admitted financing a helicopter fitted with machine guns, though he claimed it was an air ambulance. It's an idea he'd got from Bupa. The doctors fire it at NHS patients trying to get on board. 2 points to Phil. Jan, listen to this. Jan, my aunt kids, so mobile this week.
Yes, you're not supposed to let your kids use mobile phones. I mean, apparently there are people that buy their four-year-old child a mobile phone, and apparently that is deemed to be harmful. Surprise! I mean, the idea of your four-year-old kids to go, Miss Hooley, right? Yeah, she goes to, you know, Mr. Plum the postman, right? And, you know, the whole of Ballymore, right? Is, you know, I mean, what are they saying to you to engage for on the mobile phone? Apparently, some company launched a thing called MIMO, which is not a kind of an American Museum of Modern Art or anything. It's a mobile phone designed for 3 to 8-year-olds. To help them get in touch with their parents in emergencies. Where are kids going to be that you know, we're age 3 to 8 where they need to phone their mum? You know? Yeah, I don't know where they are. They're out somewhere. No doubt. She'll phone me on the mobile in a minute.
New from Kids Booper. My little tumour.
I like a phone that's actually attached to the wall. The great thing is nobody can steal it. I mean, I grew up with these long wires that attached to a box in the wall, and you didn't get mugged, and people ran down the road with Enterprise 1738 tucked under there. Possibly get halfway down Cecil Road, and whang, they come back and pale themselves on our front wall. I'm a bit unsettled thinking of that and the dangers that Macintosh will come up with an iPod which advertises being the size of a stick of chewing gum. There will be so many children being winched into hospital with an iPod down their throat playing a selection of their favourite nursery rhymes. How can they allow this, even in America?
Yeah, Alan, the iPod when Alan was a boy was a piece of paper and a comb. Alan could store over 20 tunes. He downloaded them from his nan.
The government's leading expert on radiation, Sir William Stewart, advised that children under the age of 8 should not use mobile phones because of the health risks. 14% of 7 and 8-year-olds own mobiles. 73% of 11 to 12-year-olds do, and 87% of 15 to 16-year-olds steal the mobiles from the 7 to 12-year-olds. Alan, which academic is back from reality?
Yes, Germaine Greer was in this thing I don't actually watch very much called Big Brother. And then something turned up which claimed to have spawned Sylvester Stallone. I was upstairs. I was replacing a tile on the roof at the time. And our daily Anna, who's very nice but does sod all for the money, just hoovers, watches the television and usually takes the plug out of the television to plug the hoover in downstairs. I mean, she didn't. And she said, Sarah, Sarah, come down now. And there was this extraordinary thing that was about 150 years old, and it looked like Signor. Do you remember Signor Wences? He used to do a thing with lipstick painted on his finger, and she has a mouth that comes just under her ear, or it may be her neighbour. Anyway, she's about 90, and she said she was in, or she loved Germaine Greer, and she was very sad when Germaine Greer said, I've had enough of this, I'm off, and went in a very sort of Australian, grim, brutal fashion.
Well, I thought the saddest thing, actually, I thought the very saddest thing was to, when she was leaving and she was crying, this is just tears of rage and embarrassment, and I should never have done it, and all this kind of thing, and I was going, no, you shouldn't, and but the saddest thing was that her skirt kind of, her dress came up, and you could see that she was wearing pop socks. I thought, I don't want to see my feminist icon's pop socks. I'm sorry, but I don't. I really don't. I remember what saying to my mum, and this is totally irrelevant, but anyway, I said to my mum, look, Mum, I'm getting married. I've got this really nice dress, but it shows kind of the lines underneath, and I don't... If I wear tights, it's going to be a line here, and if I wear stockings, it's going to be kind of a, you know, suspender belt, you know, thing. Why don't you wear some pop socks? I said, I'm getting married, can you imagine? On the wedding night, la la. Pardon my pop socks. Anyway, Germaine was wearing pop socks, and I thought that was the end, really.
They've got a new reality show called Herpes Island. They put six people on an island. One of them's got it. The last one without it wins.
Germaine Greer walked out of Celebrity Big Brother this week, saying she'd be naive to enter it, comparing the house to a fascist prison camp. Germaine was the first professor to appear on the show, proving that academic ability doesn't mean you've got common sense. At the end of round two, Alan and Jan have 7, but Francis and Phil are still in the lead with 10 points. Let me start round three with a cutting from the Brighton Argus.
Artificial leg left with matching shoe left. Only walked 2 miles. Suit tallish person with right leg only.
No. Based on Sadie Doherty, age 15, from Brighton. Francis, the results of which painful experiment are in the lap of the gods?
It's Oxford University.
It is.
That woman, Susan Greenfield, and she's now got a lot of money from America to set up a laboratory in Oxford where people will be tortured, and she'll test if belief in a god reduces the pain when you're on the rack.
They've got that in Guantanamo Bay. I don't know why.
Well, exactly. How are they going to find these guinea pigs? I don't know, but they've got several million dollars, so I suppose they can bribe them. The rejects from I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Neil and Christine Hamilton perhaps might like to try it. And they'll go to a laboratory in Oxford and be strung up.
Yeah, they are. They're just going to be like poking them with needles and burn them and what have you. And then they're going to hold up a crucifix in front and like go, OK, better or worse?
Okay, now the icon, better or worse.
Volunteers at Oxford University Laboratories are to be tortured in an American funding experiment to determine whether belief in God is effective in relieving pain. To preserve the integrity of the experiment, scientists won't know what religion, if any, a volunteer belongs to. It may become obvious when he shouts, "Stop, for the love of Darwin!" Phil, listen to this.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Let the Dogs Out by Baha Men. Phil, which old devils have sent paleontological textbooks to the dogs?
Yeah, it's these Chinese paleontologists have been, as you can imagine, a little bit of digging. And they've uncovered these things they're calling devil dogs. Which, rather than being a tasty snack from Bernard Matthews, are... they're saying that there were these mammals that were around about the size of a basset hound and had the pointy teeth, and used to eat dinosaurs. They were called Repinomamus robustus.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to, they were these really hard kind of, you know, if there were cavemen chavs, they would have one of these things on the end of a bit of vine, and it would be called Tyson. And they would go, "Leave it! Put the dinosaur down, Tyson!" Now, these things, and apparently Princess Anne wants to. So... And it said that they used to hunt on their back legs. It's just really weird, you know, that, you know, you would imagine that these things would get up on their back legs to hunt and to get food, which is, I've got a dog, and if he gets on his back leg, he gets a little bit of Toblerone. So that is... That has stayed with dogs throughout history.
The discovery in China of the fossils of two devil dogs, one... Repinomamus giganticus, a metre-long brute that fed on small dinosaurs, has upset paleontological orthodoxy by proving some ancient mammals were capable of competing with terrible lizards. The finds are thought to be the oldest set of mammal bones seen in China since the Rolling Stones' last concert in Beijing. Jan, why should men and women take their differences to heart?
Because, Simon, the difference is that the reason that women apparently in general live longer than men is that their hearts remain strong, and men's hearts apparently deteriorate as they get older, but women's do not. And I expect that's because, you know, women spend their lives nurturing and cherishing the people around them, and men's hearts just wither, die through lack of use, because they are all bastards.
Yes, but the women's hearts are able to maintain their pristine condition because of the cold, resentful conditions in which they are kept.
A team led by Professor David Goldspink of Liverpool John Moores University discovered that the secret of women's longevity is their very strong hearts. The team have discovered that the average male heart becomes progressively weaker with age, something that 19-year-old models intent on marrying non-Nigerian millionaires have known for years. Alan, for which cruisers does POSH stand for? Peed off, still at home.
I think it's these people who've got on one of those... It's really a sort of hull with 14 stories with... fools looking out from these balconies at the stuff below and being sick on one another, waiting for space to become available in this tiny swimming pool that they have. But they plan to go to the Cape Verde Islands and places like Eritrea and Cape of Good Hope, but they've gone to Shanklin and Bournemouth. Because when the thing pulled out of wherever it was, some probably Southampton Water, this enormous block of flats with a funnel on it, pulled out of Southampton Water and stopped. And it's been drifting up and down the Solent with all these dingbat millionaires and playing Shove Eightney on
And I think by last night they got about as far as Hastings or Worthing, and they'd all got off, and they thought it was the Cape Verde Islands. I mean, they looked just...
Precisely. Passengers who paid up to £41,000 for a 103-day round-the-world cruise have been left to console themselves with free drinks from the ship's bar after a motor fault left their cruise ship, the Aurora, unable to travel further than the Isle of Wight. Passengers using the free bar facilities said they still hope to take in the planned 40 ports. Tawny port, vintage port. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from a fine East Anglian paper, the Norwich Evening News, and it's very topical. It's about a burglar being confronted by a householder, a man who owns a nursery in Norfolk. Though actually, it was his wife who initially confronted the burglar. Matthew McNiff, prosecuting, said Mr. Gray's wife, Linda, was in her home on the 28th of September. She challenged Smith when she saw him looking through a cupboard in the kitchen. He said he was looking for somewhere to put his caravan.
This is sent in by Alan Freckingham of Leicestershire. The instant coffee a group of friends drank as they tried to sober up after a night on the tiles tasted a bit odd. Soon after, they found out why when one of their companions told them that was no coffee, that was my grandfather's ashes. And I know people that would go, oh, thank God, there was no caffeine in it.
Jan.
Well, mine is from Sandra Ness from Perth, and it's a report from the Magic Circle. It says, the magic session for the evening was opened by Dusty Miller, who showed members how to perform an intriguing coin effect. This was followed by Neil Sturton, Ian Craig, Gus McGregor and Alistair Croydon with card effects, Lou Martin with coins, Bill Dunlop with a 5-book test, and George Jenkins made the name of a chosen card appear on his spectacle case. Ian Dougal showed his own style of magic with a packet of sugar. And Ross Mackay sawed himself in half.
What an evening that was!
Alan.
From Leicester Mercury. When Inspector John Harding and Sergeant Ivor Towers arrived, they found the man hanging by his fingertips more than 100 feet above the ground. They offered him cigarettes and coffee, but he kept refusing.
Cool. Let's look at the final scores. Alan and Jana, 14. Francis and Phil, this week's winners, 19 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from the Sunday Telegraph sent in by Mrs. J. Wolfenden.
There's only one realistic way to encourage people to breed in a modern materialistic democracy: through their pockets.
Back, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Paul Jupitis, Jan Ravens and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark, Paul Carenza, and Roderick Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.